Kia ora and welcome back to the C Word, Kiwis Talk About Cancer. I'm your host, Helen King, and this is the podcast for cancery people who want real conversations about cancer. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe on Spotify or wherever you listen to good podcasts. June is Cancer Survivors Month, and June 6th is Cancer Survivors Day. Do I say Happy Survivors Day? I'm not sure. But I was really intrigued by this idea of cancer survivors because I'm not really sure how I feel about the word survivor when it comes to my cancer experience. For me personally, it doesn't really sit comfortably, but I don't always know what word I should describe the complete shitstorm that is cancer. Perhaps I had effing cancer is a good way to describe it. But, you know, it's such a funny one because I guess it's so normal to say breast cancer survivor or cancer survivor. But I feel like for different people, this is, you know, it just means such different things. I asked you guys to let me know what your thoughts were, and there was such a divide in what you felt around the word. I'm going to post some of those on Facebook and Instagram if you want to take a look. But there was definitely a divide. For some of you, yeah, cancer survivor perfectly sums up how you feel and your experience. But for others of you, it was a definite no, I do not like this word. So I'll post those up. And yeah, let me know. I'd love to keep having this conversation, especially during June, where supposedly it's our month. My guest today was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2020, and she joined me a few months ago for a really interesting live stream about sleep and cancer. I'll pop a link to that in the show notes if you missed it, but it's definitely worth listening back to it because I don't know about you, but me and sleep are not friends, especially after cancer. And Anitha Ranganathan has had a unique experience because she's had a career in caring for patients as a surgeon, and she's also been on the other side as a patient. We sat down earlier this week to discuss what the word cancer survivor means to us. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of The C Word. It's lovely to have you as on again as a guest.
Thanks for having me, Helen. It's been, what, like a few months, am I right, since we last spoke online?
It's good to sort of sit down and talk more about your experience, I think, as well. I mean, I think sleep and cancer is always going to be a very good topic or a very popular topic, but I'm always intrigued by people's cancer stories and how it's impacted them. So I guess, yeah, let's start there. And I would love for you to give us a little bit of a background of where were you when you heard the words, I'm sorry, but you have cancer?
So I can tell you the exact date of the diagnosis. It was 12th of February, 2020. Supposedly, I thought 2020 is going to be the year when everything is just going to fall into place. I think it was like a huge misconception. But yeah, so that's where it was. As you know, I'm a retired surgeon. And so I felt my lump. Retrospectively, I think I kind of consider myself lucky because it was at a place where it was like kind of superficial, just beneath the skin. And I just knew that something was off. So between you and me, it didn't come as much of a surprise when I got the diagnosis.
Yeah.
I think my husband, who was sitting by my side and was kind of trying to reassure me throughout the weekend, was like, no, it's going to be fine. It must be just something, nothing to worry about. But I just knew it. I just knew it. So it was just a confirmation. Having said that, I didn't even allow my surgeon to complete the statement because she's like, yeah, but, and that's it. I just knew what was going to come because I was sitting at the other end of the table for a change.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah, of course, I broke down. But, yeah, I was just being human then.
Absolutely. No, I think it's such an interesting thing, isn't it, that you have a medical background. You have been the person who I assume has had to deliver difficult news to patients. But I think that, I imagine that probably doesn't prepare you to be the person in that seat, being told those things?
It doesn't, Helen. It doesn't. Most medical people, especially from the generation that I belong to, luckily it has changed now in medical schools, they are teaching soft skills as well. Personally, I don't think they're soft skills anymore. I think that is more important compared to your knowledge up to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So things like empathy and communication skills have been incorporated now. Having said that, from the institution where I'm back then, it was really about trying to learn the subject. So yeah, to answer your question, even my 20 years of experience as a surgeon just didn't prepare me for it.
It is a hard thing to describe, I think, what happens in that moment, because I know for me it happened in stages where I had these, I kind of knew before the diagnosis was official, and then when the diagnosis was official, it was still this, yeah, I mean, it was just like life stopped in that moment, and it was very, very different from that moment onward.
Yeah, it's just this entire existential crisis. Like in that one statement, my entire life can change. I think it does change for everyone, maybe at different degrees and up to certain different levels, but for sure.
Yeah. And so you were diagnosed with breast cancer, and I know that you had surgery and radiation. What other treatment did you go through?
Yeah, so because mine was considered to be like stage one, initially a diagnosis. So I chose to go for what we call a conservative surgery, where I didn't have to go for an entire mastectomy out of a choice. But as a result of that, I needed radiation after that. So I had my radiation, and then because mine was hormonal positive, as you know how in breast cancer, most of us can be hormonal positive. So I am on tamoxifen right now, completed about, I think, 14 months of it. And yeah, touch wood, every year I go in, I'm going to get my mammogram and see my oncologist every 3 months. And life is supposedly normal in between that.
Supposedly, allegedly normal between those two.
I think you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think today being World Cancer Survivor Day, when this podcast episode airs, and I find it's such an intriguing term, cancer survivor, because I put out on my social media for the C word, what does this mean to you? Do you like this word? Does it resonate with you? And I got such a mixed response. Some people were like, yes, absolutely, I feel like a survivor. I went through this thing. And other people, it was just this resounding no. Absolutely not. I hate it. I hate the terminology, which I found really, really intriguing. And so I'd love for you to talk about, what does the word or the phrase cancer survivor mean to you?
So interestingly, Helen, the definition of cancer survivor is so varied in different countries and in different cancer institutions. And we're talking about ones which are really established. The definition is so different. So you have someone who's considered as a cancer survivor once they've completed treatment and henceforth. Somebody else includes even your family and your friends and your caregivers as cancer survivors. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, so different definitions are there. This is by, I think, the National Cancer Institute. And yet they have people who also may be under palliative care and who are having recurrence also are considered as cancer survivors. So basically, as long as there is somebody that you may know or you may have lived and ever been diagnosed with cancer, you already come in the category of cancer survivor. And I find that really fascinating. Because so when I sit back and I think of all the studies that I have been reading about cancer survivors, I'm sitting back and thinking, how do they even define, how do they even include those people? How do they decide that they come under cancer survivors? So that is something so basic, and I'm finding it really interesting that even that hasn't been addressed. Like, that's a basic definition that hopefully by now should be more, you know, definite. And that's why I think addressing somebody as a cancer survivor is something that you've got to be really careful about. So tomorrow, hopefully, your partner and my husband are cancer survivors. How does that even make sense? Because they were very involved with us. Again, somebody who may be in hospice is considered as a cancer survivor. So there seems to be this huge spectrum. And I think for most, it is really necessary to really maybe make that like kind of mainstream. Everybody has to have, it has to be a universal definition. It can't be depending on which country you're coming from. I looked up New Zealand. I was like, all right, let's see what we follow with New Zealand. And in my very quick search, I couldn't really find what definition we actually follow. And interestingly, you are considered a survivor from the time you are diagnosed.
Wow.
So from the time, so this is one of the definitions, from the time you're diagnosed, you're already considered a cancer survivor. Now, between you and me, while we were going through treatment, if someone said, oh, you're a survivor, I don't think that would have gone very well.
No.
You know, so yeah, I really understand where this entire controversy is around because it's confusing. It doesn't seem to be streamlined as yet. And I think that is really, really important, both from a point of a patient as well as a point of a doctor or anybody else who's involved in your care. So
I think
definitely big. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you're right, that idea that words matter and yes. and they matter in our in different contexts. And because I really struggle with it, to be honest. I don't know what to call myself. Sometimes I do call myself a breast cancer survivor because I don't know what else to label what that part of my life is. But I know that sometimes I think some of my discomfort comes from that there are some of us who don't survive cancer. And so there's part of me that feels a little bit uncomfortable thinking, well, what does it mean for people who have incurable cancer? Do they not survive cancer? But then when you talk about, well, there's this definition out there saying, is that still a cancer survivor? It's really, yeah, it's so not black and white at all.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, if you look at it in that way from one of the definitions, they are really, I mean, the forecast or rather the prediction is that looking at how we are going, every one in two people are going to have cancer sometime in their life. And when you're talking about having cancer, we're talking about full-blown cancer. All of us have got cancer cells. It's just about how we're going to allow it to run our life. That's the right word to use. So that means if it's World Cancer Survivor Day, then it's a World Cancer Survivor Day for everybody. Because you either have had cancer yourself, you're going to have cancer yourself, or you may be knowing someone who's had cancer. So I find it really quite, I mean, I shouldn't use the word amusing. I mean, we're talking about cancer all said and done, but it's after a while you realize you've got to develop a little bit of a sense of humor about all of this. Because it's not going to be pretty dampening.
Oh, you absolutely do. And, you know, I got some fantastic responses to, you know, what does survivor mean to you? And someone called it, I'm a carcinomy or something along those lines. And that's quite good. So I think, yeah, I think sometimes you do have to, because I use the word cancery, a cancery person, because I think sometimes taking a little bit of lightness around it, because it is such a, I mean, you mentioned it before, it's such an enormous thing for someone to have happen in their life.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not trying to trivialize the whole thing, because I've had people saying, oh, well, you're early stage, you're stage one, you're going to be fine. Oh, you've had breast cancer, it's the commonest cancer, there's so much of research behind it, you're going to be cured. I'd be like, oh, yeah, right, does that mean you'd like to have the diagnosis? Like, do you want to be in my place? So yeah, I'm definitely not trivializing the whole thing. But what I'm really realizing is it's about also how we look at it. It's like saying, well, you're a survivor from the war, or you're a survivor from the Christchurch earthquake. Sorry, that's the only thing I can think of right now. So yes, it can be an earthquake, it can be a cyclone, it can be the floods, it can be the COVID. But having said that, how come we don't call all of them survivors? And I think it's also a matter of how we are reacting to the whole thing. Now, if I was to sit back and think, for me, I think cancer was something that has really given me like a crash course in life in the past year. So I can say, well, I'm a life survivor as well. Forget about what only happened last year. So for many of us, it is something which we, and I can talk for myself actually here, but I think it is something that came for a good reason. And I'm not a person who's been able to swear at my cancer. I've never been able to kind of say, oh, okay, all right, like I want that to like just be killed and this and that and everything. For me, I took it as something that it's a message that I've had to kind of learn. Yeah, it may be a little bit of a cruel way to learn it, but if this is what it required, then that's it. And in the midst of all of it, I think there were a lot of things that I'm kind of really grateful for. And I'm talking not only in terms of only your kind, I'm not talking about in a spiritual way, but the way the whole thing happened and a lot of stuff, the way it came, I kind of felt that even though it was being handed over to me, it was being handed over to me literally like in a very careful way. Yeah.
I quite like that. Yeah, because I was thinking this is, it's really, because I think we've talked about this before when we've chatted in the past about, because I feel like cancer was my body's message to me in some ways, and in other ways I think it was just this bloody dumb luck that happened to me. But I think for me and my personality, I needed like a big shake-up. So I'm going, hello?
We don't see the small red flags, do we? It's like all the time waving. It's like, that's not for me.
Yeah.
Like you've got this big thing that's just come over here and you're like, okay, now there's no ignoring it. So, and let's be honest, between you and me, if you were really to think back how your journey has been since 2-3 years now, if I remember.
Yeah, 3 years, yeah.
Yeah. Would you be doing half the things that you're doing now if it hadn't been for the diagnosis?
No, not at all. And that's the funniest thing, isn't it, is that there are some silver linings, I think.
Yeah. I like to call it diamonds, or preferably like titanium or platinum.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Silver was a small red flag we didn't listen to.
That's
big.
Yeah, okay. I think that's a good point, though, because when I was reading up about, like, what is this World Cancer Survivor Day or Month? What is this all about? And part of it is to raise awareness around what it's like post-cancer, the things that people who have been through cancer need, and which I think is something that I'm very passionate about, because I feel like we're lacking, especially in New Zealand, around support or guidance of what do you do now? What? How do I look after myself? And I feel like from what I know of you and I've seen of you, that you took that opportunity to really go, right, okay, I'm going to change something and go down a different path. And I'd love to know how you came to that decision and how you have managed that post-treatment time.
So I must admit, like, I was in a relatively good job when I just finished, you know, my radiation. And then I just couldn't cope with the fatigue. And I think, again, it was a lesson where you kind of finally thought and said, okay, your body's trying to tell you something. And if you're not going to listen to it now, you're never going to listen to it. So I very consciously had to let go of my job. And being a doctor and things like that, it's kind of quite big. So I found cancer to be one of the most humbling experiences in my life. And trust me, I've had a lot of traumas even before this. But yeah, this one really took the cake. So me, I just realized that there was just so much more. I mean, honestly, New Zealand does have a lot of support compared to many other countries that I'm aware of. But having said that, it really drops off once. I'm not going to use the word cancer survival after knowing what it actually means. Once you're done with your so-called active treatment, and I'm not going to say complete treatment either, because I don't think we ever really complete our treatment.
No.
And that's when I realized, I said, all right, so one thing is what happens between when you're seeing your oncologist or you're seeing your surgeon or whatever. But really, I think the real healing actually really happens in between your appointments. It's about maybe what you're eating, because now more and more evidence is there. Food is medicine. You've got to be careful about what's going, how you're feeding yourself. And it's not only about your body. It's also about your mind and your soul, right? And so initially for me, it was like, all right, we're going to kind of do it as an integrative approach about how we're going to be helping ourselves to heal at different levels. And then I got into this whole fascination of my sleep. Oh, not really my sleep. But yeah, I was doing everything right. And then I was... did the plant-based, organic, doing the exercise, all the works. And yeah, there would be times when I'm awake at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and I'm like, oh, what's happening? What's happening here? And I went back to my years of experience as an ENT surgeon, where interestingly, I was always very, very passionate about sleep. So I've done research on sleep. I've had publications on sleep, things like that. And I said, hang on, this is the time for me to actually bridge over my professional experience along with my personal experience and what I'm really struggling with. And sleep is quite beautiful because it is a reflection of both your conscious and your subconscious healing. So you can have control about what you're eating, how much exercise you're doing, your work, your whatever. But your sleep is something that's going to be quite evasive. And maybe me, I love something that's a little bit challenging. So that's where, so even though I kind of call people, hey, you're struggling with your sleep, we can do something about it. But I don't only then go and tell them, all right, you need to do this, you need to do that, only related to sleep. But I have this entire holistic thing about what are the different things you can do to support your sleep. And that also means many of us do require a little bit more of a deeper healing. And again, mental health, no one wants to talk about it, but everybody knows when you're given a diagnosis of something like cancer, if you're human and if you're breathing, you are going to have that huge downfall. And we love to cover it up by keeping ourselves busy. We have to kind of try to even heal that part of it as well, the whole PTSD part of cancer. No one really wants to talk so much about it because mental health is still something big. And let's be honest, you tell someone that you want to go back to work and you're kind of having PTSD, they're going to look at you and they're like, oh my God, is this person good enough to come back to work? So it's still, I mean, even though it's supposedly, we just had Mental Health Awareness Month in May, between you and me, how many people were going to come out in the open and say? So I think there is still a huge kind of stigma. And that's a different topic. But so what I really do is like my fascination is to try and get people back to sleep. And so I do involve my medical component of it as well and make sure that they don't have anything else that's going on because you do need to address other stuff as well. Why sleep is also so important again is people are talking about exercise, people are talking about food, but sleep itself, it's got a double-edged sword. There are certain cancers now that have actually been proven, like colorectal cancer, where if you haven't been sleeping too well, then you are more prone to it. How you respond to your treatment also can be affected by your sleep.
Wow.
Yeah. And the other thing is also, obviously, we know that post-cancer, your sleep anyway goes down the hill. But what's interesting is after you finish your treatment as well, you still may not be able to go back to your sleep. And I think that's when the whole thing of that really, you need to kind of deeper go in what exactly is happening. I mean, there's some people who just consider cancer to just be another incident in their life. You know, they work through it and they're fine and they're like, yeah, we had it, whatever. My hat's off to them as well. But they are people, and I definitely come in that category where I sit back and I say, all right, this did happen to me for a darn good reason and a big message. And I'm not going to rush through it. I'm actually going to sit down and give it time for what it wants. And so that's where the whole thing, and it really, I didn't have to really learn anything specific, excepting for one thing, because for insomnia, they have a thing called cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. So I have become a practitioner of what we call brief behavioral therapy, which is much more compact and faster. In fact, I was the first one to do it from this person who's giving it out in Australia. Mm-hmm. So that's giving me an additional qualification, but what I do is much, much more than that, much more than that. And it's really about what people come to me for. It's a personalized plan. Everybody is so different. There's no way I can get a group of 10 people and do it together because you can't get radiation together. So you can't do this in groups. So yeah. And I'm loving it. I think this type of work actually continues on in your own healing as well, because everybody that I'm working with, at the end of every session, there is something a little bit more I've learned about myself as well. And it's a beautiful way of giving back. Besides the benefits of working from home, being my own boss, and taking care of myself first and foremost, which has become very pivotal for me. I don't start work before 10 or 11 in the morning. And I have to have a good nighttime routine because I'm telling everybody about how you need to be sleeping well. It doesn't make sense if I'm on doing something.
Yes.
I don't practice what I'm preaching. But I love it. I just absolutely love it.
I think that you made some really good points there. And I think it is a good conversation to have about, because I definitely have post-traumatic stress from the cancer. And I have tried to go back to work too early and that didn't work out. And now what I've really realized that even 3 years on, work for me is challenging. And for lots of reasons, having PTSD is tiring. It is quite a draining thing, I think, to sort of have trauma or your body holds it. And so I think very much like you, I had to get to that point where I thought, how do I set up my life where actually my healing and my well-being are first and foremost, which I think for a lot of people, differently, it's still, I'm not 100% there. It can be really challenging to put earning money out of the equation because I'm like, yeah, exactly like you. My day does start early because my partner's a builder, so he goes early, but then the dogs demand that I go downstairs. And so I go downstairs and we sit on the couch and we watch breakfast. But and then I walk them in my work day, the work I'm doing at the moment, exactly, it doesn't start till 10 or 11 because I have that morning to kind of ease into the day and do things like the walk with the dogs and that sort of thing that are setting me up to feel good.
Absolutely. I really like what you brought up, especially regarding the work part of it. It is so important because like how we discussed earlier, unlike you and me who have supporting partners,
yeah,
many people don't have that privilege. And yeah. So one of the things I actually talk about with my clients, and that is like very early on in our sessions, once we start doing together, is the money part of it. So I want them to feel that they are actually, whatever it is, they're never going to run out of money. And, yeah. You know, you're going through your cancer, your mind kind of becomes very narrow. And it becomes difficult for you to think of anything else. And when you have somebody else who's going to be able to give you kind of ideas and different thought solutions, it goes a long way. So actually, unlike the typical programs where people are talking about other stuff, like a holistic thing, I actually talk about money as well, finances. Interestingly, this is where it's really interesting. What really keeps us awake at night once we... Okay, not survival. Once we finish treatment, or actually even while we're going through treatment, let's be honest, compared to the fear of recurrence, the fear of your finances is actually more.
It's huge. Yeah.
Which is so sad. You've got the diagnosis as it is. You're already so scared that the cancer is going to come back. And then in addition to that, you've got to worry about these things as well. So this is something that I definitely address with all my clients, whether they, most of them do want it, because at some point the money thing always comes. It's like, kind of a stuff. But I like to talk about it, have it out on the table, and they get clarity about it. And I think that's really, really, really important. Work is important. There's no doubt about that. And I personally believe, like, if we are really doing what we really love, the money is just going to come. The money is definitely going to come. But it's a journey. And it just...
it
involves going on Instagram and doing all those crazy reels, which I still haven't done. But I don't see myself doing that. But I mean, it's fun. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess closing the conversation. What do you want people, and I guess I love this term, people call them cancer muggles, so people who haven't perhaps been through cancer, what do you think, what's the one thing you would want people to know about what it's actually like to have gone through a cancer diagnosis?
Who haven't gone through cancer themselves? Or who haven't?
People who haven't.
Well, I think it's really important to know at some point in your life, you will be having someone who may have a diagnosis of cancer, and preferably don't put your story of thinking that cancer is a death sentence onto them, especially if your opinion and you are somebody who's important to that person and whose opinion matters. Then as much as we want you to bring on your advice or your experience or what you've heard or what you've seen or what you learned, please don't do that. Because that just takes away all the power, all the trust, and all the faith that we are clinging on to. Yeah, and that I think that would be the main thing. Like, we want to be supported, we want to be loved, but we want hope as well. And if you don't have the capacity to show us hope, it's better you don't say anything. Just hug us.
That is such good advice. And I think that kind of, that sort of rounds it out nicely. And in terms of the fraughtness of the term cancer survivor, is that to let that the person in your life guide you on the words they want to use and how they are experiencing their cancer. Because I think that sometimes the younger you are when you've had it and the more at stake there has been, sometimes the impact, the emotional and ongoing impact can be greater in that person's life. And sometimes I think that support from outside is just so important in how we bounce back from, bounce back is a terrible way of putting it, how we, you know, heal and recover from it.
Yeah, absolutely. My heart goes out to people who are maybe breastfeeding or who hope to get pregnant and who've been given a diagnosis of cancer and are having to remove their tubes and their ovaries. But yeah, that's just the way it is. And yeah, I guess between you and me, I think I would have been completely broken if this diagnosis was given to me at the age of 20 or 30. But as I said, I think that in a way, there has been a lot of a divine intervention in the way the cancer has manifested in my body.
Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah. Because we are starting the process of IVF because we had two embryos stored at the time. And I feel like there's, and we're going to be talking to a guest in coming weeks about this because we're actually going through this at the same time. Yeah, I've got to have my mammogram first. So I sort of feel like there's still these hurdles. And I think that's what I would love people to know is that, yes, we've the diagnosis and the treatment for me 3 years behind me, or if you, it's a year or so behind you. But cancer is often still very present, and especially at times where, yeah, you have to go get your mammogram or you need to go see your oncologist, or for couples like us who are now looking at seeing if we can have a child, cancer still feels like it is running the show at times because we've got to get over these hurdles of, well, you need a clear mammogram. Yeah, so that's what I would love people to know, is that sometimes you don't just sort of...
The thing about cancer is that most of us have been so used to being in control through our life. And suddenly with cancer, you just have to embrace uncertainty. Forget about embrace uncertainty. You just got to make it part of you and can really just give and do the best that we can. And it's pretty interesting how we manage to cope. And I think that we really underestimate the strength that each of us actually have. And it is challenging at different levels. It is challenging at different ages. It is what it is. There's just no demeaning. There's just no, you can't trivialize cancer. I remember I'd given a talk, sorry, but just about under 2 minutes. I'd given a talk in one of the women's whatever. And so as part of the talk, because everybody had come prepared with their slides and everything. And at the end of it, I was like, oh gosh, I'm done with these slides. So I just went up there and I said, listen, everybody's told about the theory part of it. I'm just going to tell you what my experience and few lessons. And as part of that, I said, well, cancer is something like almost, it's like you feel like you've got that gun pointed in your direction all the time. Right? That's all I said. And then one lady, the main moderator, walks up and she's like, all right. And I'm like, okay, I'm done. And then she comes up and she's like, oh, you know what? But even if you have a heart attack or a stroke, that also, you can even die of it. In fact, in cancer, you may live, but you may die of a stroke or a heart attack. And I was like, wow. So between you and me, there's a lot of work to be done. I guess she was trying to make me feel better. And you kind of laughing through it, and you're like, "Yeah, woman, you haven't been through it, maybe, and maybe that's why you don't know." And I don't expect you to understand, because hey, 1 year ago, even I had no clue.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't judge.
I would find it very hard to answer that nicely.
I tend to smile a lot nowadays.
Oh, that is hilarious. Anita, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your thoughts with us. If people are interested in finding out about your work, where can we find you? Where can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, sure, Helen. So I am on Instagram. I've got my Facebook page as well. My website is kind of getting revamped for the last 3 months. But yeah, there are a lot of options. The best option, of course, would be, I guess, Instagram. You've got a message and it's directly there. And yeah, I really want to help in whatever way I can. It's cancer, we can't take our life. We shouldn't be taking it easy anymore. And I really believe that the amount of involvement you put while you are going through treatment, it really makes a huge impact on the outcome and how you're going to be having your life. We want to have a quality of life. We don't want to be only survivors. We want to be thrivers. That's the only time you're going to hear me using those words, Helen.
I love it. I love it. Hey, thank you so much. It was awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word Kiwis Talk About Cancer is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM and anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word.
Yo traigo para ti algo excitante, mi jarabe te levanta de la tumba, es un jaleo pa' que siempre te salante, un poquito de mela, sazón y rumba, es un pasito que te voy a enseñar, un menito que sé que te gustará, y cuando aprendas a bailarlo con sabor, te aseguro que este ritmo gozará.
Come on, come on. rallying. I've been keeping my eye on your movement. I can't see no room for improvement. But why you all over there on your Jack Jones? You need to let me get behind your backbone. Cause I'm the man for the job, let me work here. I won't waste no time, I make it worth it. 100%, I make it worth it. You got a body to die for, let me work here. Now it's murder in the dance floor. I wanna take this further in the dance floor. I ain't forceful, but I'm still hardcore. You're gonna give me everything I ask for. It's not a long team, you're the boom team. Maybe more than a hotel room team. I'll never know if I just walk past. I really wanna dance, so I guess I'll just pass.
She's no pole. Look at those eyes, it's in her eyes. She's good to go. She can satisfy my mind, body, and
come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me. I see you glance at me, that's why I'm asking, be. So let's party, bitch, come and dance with me.
If I'm out on my own, then I can look at you, looking at me. If I'm out on a date, then I just shut my eyes, then I can't see. Get away from the bar, tell your boyfriend, hold your jaw, and start to
you glance at me, that's why I'm asking, be. So let's party, bitch, come and dance with me. Yo, it goes on and on. I see you get excited like this is my song. You think I wanna get involved, you are not wrong. Cause I've been waiting for this moment all night long. So I creep, creep, creep back to your seat. I've got my left eye checking out your scenery. I've got my right eye right where it needs to be. No matter how I look at it, you look good to me. Still, I'm looking for the perfect view. The way I see it, that's right next to you. I know you've probably heard it before, but still, I love it when you flex like that for real. So don't stop doing what you do when you do it. I just wanna be a part of it when you do it. I feel like a wally if I don't pursue it. And I can't go through it, so let's
she
get through it.
No pole. Look at those eyes, it's in her eyes. She's good to go. She can satisfy my mind, body, and
come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me. I see you glance at me, that's why I'm asking, be. So let's party, be. Come and dance with me.
If I'm out on my own, then I can look at you, looking at me. If I'm out on a date, then I just shut my eyes, then I can't see. Get away from the bar, tell your boyfriend, hold your jaw, and start.
I see you glance at me, that's why I'm asking, be. So let's party, be. Come and dance with me. I know you didn't come out to stand and stare. You bought new shoes and you did up your hair. You made a real effort tonight and it shows. I can tell by your face you don't want to be alone, cause the mood is right and the time is now. And if you can't do it, I'll show you how. What you gotta do is get loose, let go, just throw a couple shakes, put your skills on show.
Kiss me, kiss me. somebody.